Would you like to write code faster and smarter with rich code completion and clever code analysis? Find anything in a solution instantly? What if you could easily explore and run tests, work with Git, Mercurial, or TFS seamlessly, and refactor in a few clicks? All this and more is available in JetBrains Writer, a .NET IDE for Windows, Mac, and Linux. Try it free for 30 days. Get Writer today at RIDERIDE.net. That's RIDERIDE.net. Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes, and today I'm talking with Jeremy Boyd. He's a CTO at Raygun and an expert on all things scale and APM. What is APM? I hear this a lot.
G'day, Scott. Thanks for having me. Well, APM stands for Application Performance Monitoring or Application Performance Management, depending on which flavor you take. Really, in a nutshell, it's about looking at server-side performance. What is your application actually doing? And an interesting sort of way of thinking about this is that when we build web applications, for example, we load the site and we get really good data in the browser actually these days about what is happening with a request. And what you generally find is that the longest time is waiting for things to come back from the server, mm-hmm. right? The code that you wrote just takes time to execute. And you often wonder, what's going on down there? Why is it taking so long? Is it a bad query? Is it some bad code that I wrote? And so APM is all about trying to demystify that, really give you the insights into what's going on down there, and more specifically, what is it that could be a problem that you could actually then take some action on and fix and improve the situation.
Mm-hmm. Now, I might be making myself look bad or giving away secrets or not good secrets, but 20 years ago, when I was doing really large financial services systems, at least large for the late 90s, early 2000s, we were still spending a lot of time parsing logs, running log parser, sucking logs into SQL Server and trying to figure out what was going on. And we would do these things much like forensically. We could tell you what happened afterwards, but there was very little what's happening right this moment going on. When did that start to change?
That's right. And I remember those days as well. And I'm actually pretty glad that we've moved past a lot of that. When this sort of changed in my opinion, I think is really when we saw bandwidth really increase and people, particularly for hosting environments and for getting access to this data, bandwidth became less of a problem. And also the proliferation of the cloud, which allowed us to really ramp up resources to meet the sort of scale challenge that you're faced with dealing with increasing volumes of data, particularly when you start measuring things at an increasingly smaller and smaller level. Mm-hmm. This, just as a bit of a tangent, I guess, one of the interesting things that we sort of found when we got into the application performance monitoring space is what's actually going on under the hood. And as it turns out, there's an amazing amount of things going on under the hood. It kind of reminded me a little bit when I was younger. You'd read Scientific American or something like that and you know, learn that, oh, below the level of the atom, there's another level. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like that with the code that we write. And so as we delve down, you know, even a simple program like Hello World, you know, console.writeline Hello World, even though you, on the surface that only looks like it would take two method calls, you know, enters main, enters console.writeline and exits. There's actually hundreds of underlying calls that go on in the .NET framework to actually support that. And so as you start to kind of measure down to that level, the amount of data that you can start, you know, generating and interpreting starts to really mass up. And I think, you know, in the past, we were never really able to take on board all of that data all at once. You know, mm-hmm. we couldn't put it through the network fast enough. The machines that we had access to just simply weren't fast enough to process that. We could do, you know, batched processing or a lot of offline processing and crunch those numbers over time, but we never really had access to it in a way that we could look at this stuff in real time. Mm-hmm. And I think between the cloud, between that sort of increase in bandwidth, we've been able to start unlocking some of these new realms that exist below the surface.
Yeah, I remember in production, we used to worry about things like, well, you don't want to turn logging on in production, certainly not on verbose or diagnostic, because you're going to be filling up the disk or filling up the pipe or whatever. Like if you're doing aggressive logging, you can, you know, the perception was, at least when I was starting out, that you're not scaling if you're doing all of these logging. But do we have enough perf and enough pipe now that we can be a lot more verbose in our logging?
We sure can. Fair to say, there's always a trade-off for these things. I mean, it's interesting because certainly when you delve into this realm, you know, performance is becoming much more of a concern for you. You know, for people who are looking at APM solutions, you know, a big question on their mind is how can I improve performance of my system? And so, you know, one of the things you don't want is to necessarily degrade the system by putting in some sort of invasive approach, like you mentioned, the logging, which, you know, that will generate a lot of I.O. So that would hamper things if that's not, you know, managed properly. So, but we are able to really sort of solve this now, partially because machines are a little bit faster, we've got better resources, but also because we're now offloading that data, not necessarily locally, but, you know, through a network, through to the cloud. And that, you know, again, that sort of couples with that bandwidth story, we've got the ability to kind of just send vast amounts more data than we would have thought about in the past as being sort of real or possible.
Right. So then you're saying that the simplistic perspective that I was doing 20 years ago was logging or maybe log shipping, but now it's events, it's exceptions, it's internal, and it's how deep you want to go in the stack. And then you're offloading all of that, get it off of the machine as quickly as possible and into some kind of a pipeline or an ingestion pipeline.
That's exactly right. Yeah. I mean, so conceptually how our sort of approach works is that we say for .NET profile, there's profiling APIs in .NET, which for anyone who would love a good little adventure, a bit of a geek adventure, I can highly recommend actually looking into the profiling APIs just to learn a little bit more about how the .NET framework actually works. It's really enlightening. Quick sort of example of that is, you know, going back to my mention of under the hood, there's actually hundreds of these method calls happening on a simple program, even like Hello World. The Hello World example for, say, the full framework would generate about 200-odd method calls under the hood, where, and you don't think about this, it's things like, you know, system.globalization because it's writing to a stream which then goes to some output source which has to be formatted for the local culture. It's a stream, so it's got a lot of mechanics under the hood there. So all of that is, you know, quite interesting to understand how it works. And when you sort of get down to that level, you suddenly realize, well, actually, there's, you know, there's a lot going on here and there's a lot I could potentially control and manage the performance of. And that sort of, you know, we learned a lot of that through building an APM tool. And then sort of that gave us new insights, I guess, and a new level of kind of understanding of that, how things work and where the optimizations might be able to be gained, potentially by looking at how the sort of framework itself has actually been built. You know, we're quite lucky these days with the core CLR, the work that's been going on in .NET Core, because that's in the open. And, you know, a big focus in .NET Core has been on improving performance of the framework. So I do a lot of watching of the commits that go into the .NET Core repositories, often just to kind of, you know, look at where are things being tuned and how, what are the techniques that are being used to tune, you know, performance in the framework itself? Because a lot of time those techniques are actually transposable to the code that you might write, particularly when, again, you're looking at your system and you're thinking, well, you know, this area is slow. And you've delved into, you know, a specific enough sort of view of it to say, right, well, it's this method or it's this kind of algorithm that we're operating over that's sort of not running as well as it could. What are our approaches that we could look at to tune the performance here? Mm-hmm. So, you know, we applied a lot of that in our ingestion pipeline because, you know, as you kind of mentioned, you know, there's a potential to just generate an amazing amount of data by sort of observing what's going on in a process. And, you know, we have to deal with that data. And, you know, as sort of data comes into our system, we have to kind of take a look at it, figure out what it represents. We do a lot of work in terms of kind of rationalizing the view of what happened in a program and presenting that nicely, for example, using a flame chart to a developer so they can better understand and sort of focus in on what is it that really is going to make a difference to improving my system.
How important would it be then, though, to not look at some of those events? I mean, like, you really want to monitor what matters. And like, there's a joke I heard on Twitter recently that said that the biggest crime that the C programming language ever did was that they convinced the world there wasn't a runtime. So someone might hear you say, well, you know, there's like 2,000 things happening underneath console.writeline. Yeah, .NET sucks. But, cons without Rightline, you know, doesn't get even close to the metal, no matter what language you're writing it in. There's always something underneath. But do they really matter? If I'm trying to do Hello World at scale, I probably can lose some of those events.
Yep. You know, you always have to put this stuff in perspective. You know, you can, you could optimize the hell out of anything. But you have to kind of put it in perspective of what, you know, what's going to make the best impact for the objectives I'm trying to reach with this system. You know, is it the fact that I want my customers to have a certain experience, and that infers a certain load time, which infers that I need to kind of target performance on certain queries to meet certain SLAs internally? I'll focus my efforts there. I'm not going to focus my efforts necessarily on, you know, shaving off another few nanoseconds off this particular function. So the context certainly matters. And again, you know, a big part of what our job is really is to try and highlight where is it that the big wins are, where you're going to gain performance to try and, you know, meet those objectives that you've got about what your system should be doing and how your customers should be experiencing it.
What about some of the, like, if you think about it from a more philosophical perspective, I like to think about like the Heisenberg uncertainty principle, that I can observe something and tell you where it is or how fast it's going, but not both. When we observe systems, large systems like this, when we instrument them, are we taking a chance that it might not behave the same way it did? Because we don't want to say, well, it worked on my machine, or it worked before I plugged in an APM solution.
Yeah, the certainly, that's always a concern. Another thing that kind of comes into play is that, you know, isolated observations are always just going to be that. They're just going to be a snapshot of the activity at a given point in time. And that doesn't necessarily mean that that's how the, you know, the rest of the requests or the rest of the interactions with that particular method or particular endpoint are going to always behave. And so, again, it's about building up a big picture of this over time. You know, the good thing about putting in a solution like this is that, and having it kind of observing for longer periods of time, as you build up a better view, a better holistic view of what's going on in the longer term. You know, is it just certain types of users, and they might be, you know, important users, or they might just be kind of different in the way that they're interacting with my software. Those users are having a problem, but everyone else is fine. And, you know, information is power. So taking a lot of that insight in and be able to kind of make informed decisions about where to deploy your time and effort, because at the end of the day, you know, for most of us doing development, cutting code, you know, there's a never-ending list of things to be done. And really, a lot of the time we just want to focus ourselves on the things that are going to make the most difference and actually achieve good wins and, you know, get the, all the good positive feedback out of that. The last thing we want to do is make, you know, an optimization that was just not actually worth it or anything like that. You know, there's always an overhead with bringing in some kind of observation approach, like monitoring tool, a logging framework. So you just have to keep that in mind. And that's where we often do an approach where we'll do an A-B kind of deployment of something where we put a new approach in, we measure how we got how the baseline looks, we'll put it in, we'll measure the other side of afterwards. What's the impact of putting this technique in play? That's important. You've always got to measure things and just kind of understand and put that back into the context of, you know, what am I trying to do here? What was I trying to achieve?
Actian Zen Database is the best-in-class, single, secure, scalable architecture for edge data management. It's the perfect solution for software developers who want dedicated application data management and deliver business-critical products and services into OT and low IT environments. Customizable installation, self-tuning, seamless backward compatibility, minimal memory requirements, and exceptionally low support requirements. And better performance than most alternatives like SQLite all means that you can deliver applications to customers at scale across a wide range of platforms. With direct access from C++, Python, and other popular languages, Zen's simple set of APIs significantly expands the pools of developers capable of building their next business-critical application on Actian Zen. Try it today at actian.com/zen. That's actian.com/zen. I've heard that there are profilers that are listening all the time and APM systems that are paying attention to everything. And then I've also heard the idea of a sampling profiler, or like it looks at 5% of the requests. Do you have thoughts about whether that's a good idea or not?
I certainly think sampling is a reasonably good idea. There's certainly an overhead involved with, particularly for .NET, the implementation of how profilers work with the .NET framework, which again, you know, kudos to the efforts that are going on in .NET Core. One of the things that's happened there is there's better documentation has sort of surfaced around how to interact with the profiling APIs that exist in the .NET framework and in .NET Core. But there's always an overhead of using that sort of approach. You can reduce the impact of that sort of thing by taking more of a sampling based mindset to this. Mm-hmm. Again, it's sort of it's one of these things where you need to kind of find the right balance. You know, if you sample too aggressively, you open the window to losing a lot of the outliers that might occur. Mm-hmm. Often it's a case where you often want to build up a big picture first, and there's a cost to that. Over time, you might feel there's a confidence level. You understand the nature of the data you're seeing come through, the trends. You know, you've already identified where the key hotspots are, and you start to dial the rate of observation down accordingly, which would correspond to improved performance just through less overhead of that sort of approach being in play.
I see. So you could do something like have it be on listening for everything at dev and half the things at staging and 10% or something at production. Depends on your problem. And then, of course, all exceptions or anything bad that might have happened.
Exactly. Yep. And one other sort of approach that we are certainly are pushing in this space is the idea of leveraging this more for supporting debugging scenarios. You know, one of the key challenges that a lot of developers have, particularly when things go into production, is that you lose your access to kind of instrument or get really detailed analysis of what's going on. For example, local state variables. What are the values of those method, arguments that come through to parameters for method calls? You know, often a lot of that context is quite important to reproducing a problem or understanding how a problem manifests. Be it a performance problem, be it a crash, you know, the context often is very critical to really understanding the nature of the problem. So, one of the things that we really sort of have spent a lot of time looking at is how we can leverage this sort of capability to really support those production debugging type scenarios where you kind of know the heuristics of how a problem is going to manifest. It's going to be this user at this time of day with this type, at this endpoint, and we've seen this behavior, and I just want to know more about it. And mm-hmm. So, the controls are there to allow you to just, so instead of rule, when this type of thing is in action, in play, give me more data about it. But every other time, just don't send as much data about what's going on, because I'm not going to be looking at it and I'm not interested in collecting all of that.
I see. So it really is something where you don't necessarily dial it up for the entire application, but you might categorize things like the shopping cart's acting weird. Let's dial up logging on the shopping cart or dial up all events for the shopping cart.
Yeah, I mean, there's always going to be areas which you're going to be focused on. You know, today, this week, we're really focused on the shopping cart, and we really need a much richer level of information about what's going on there to make better decisions about what we need to do. We're in that investigation phase. We just need to collect a lot of data in this space. But everything else, that's just business as usual. Let's just sample that. Let's not collect as much information. We obviously want to know what's going on there in case any problems do turn up, but we don't need as much detail.
Now, oftentimes when you've got, mobile devices or local applications, an app that I'm running on Windows or an app that I'm running on my iPhone, there's privacy concerns. I want to make sure I'm not, a lot of people don't like telemetry. They don't want to be kind of quote unquote spied on the website. You have a little bit less control. If someone's implementing an APM product, how do they make sure that they don't accidentally leak information out? You don't want to necessarily throw a credit card across a boundary into some third-party APM system. Do you have filters, or what's the best practice for that?
Yep, that's a really good question. I mean, data privacy is quite an important concern in our space. The nature of the problem is quite vast, really, because as you kind of allude to, the opportunity to just send sensitive data across the wire when you're looking at things more at a system level rather than thinking so much about the data that's going on through these systems, the opportunities are vast. Whether that be PII information or, access tokens, which would give you, an opportunity to escalate privilege into a system, those are all of concern. Our general approach for this is to allow people to sort of filter out the information, to kind of effectively kind of give you a hook then before the information leaves your boundary to our system to sort of do any kind of data sanitization, meet your own requirements, as it were, in terms of what data is sensitive. You know, usually this can be expressed with patterns or regex, you know. So that's kind of typically how we deal with this problem. We also, you know, particularly with, you know, other products that we build, like crash reporting, you know, it's more a case of there's some standard things, you know, like a lot of it's going into web systems. So, you know, you're always going to look at the form. You're always going to look at what's coming across in the query string, user input. You know, that's where this information is likely to be coming from. So let's just scan that for known patterns first, and you can get rid of a lot of that information by default. But then, you know, there's always going to be system-specific stuff like those security tokens or just things that only the developer of that system would have an intimate awareness of, that will require them to really kind of ensure that that data is removed prior to sending it up to a service like ours.
Now, of course, in the interest of full disclosure, there have been episodes of the podcast that Raygun has sponsored in the past. But of course, for this conversation, one of the reasons that I called you and wanted to talk to you was the scale that you're running is just bananas. You're saying billions of events. I wanted to understand how one scales like that, and do you get backed up? Is there a queue? What's the queue like? I just can't quite get my head around the scale at which you ingest information.
It's pretty vast, I have to tell you. And again, sort of going back to that sense of, you know, where we were 20 years ago, I would never have really dreamt that, you know, the rates at which we kind of can ingest information, when you're dealing with the whole internet as your potential source, it's very, very easy actually to just completely overwhelm yourself with traffic. So in terms of how we sort of went about it, I actually took a lot of, vision or, you know, inspiration from early talks that came out of Amazon, how they sort of did their scaling. You know, they sort of talked about how they really went through more of an incrementally sort of scaling approach. You know, we rebuilt the system because we reached the scaling point, and then we rebuilt it again because we reached another scaling point. And so we've kind of progressed in a similar way. You know, we initially, when we sort of embarked on this journey, we were kind of a different company and we did different things, and this was just an idea. And so at that point, you know, you don't really want to overcommit to, you know, well, you know, this could turn into be a really, really massive thing. So we may want to provision ahead of ourselves. Instead, you know, one of our other focuses has always been on cost and performance, you know, squeezing out everything from the dollars that we spend. So for us, you know, it was a case of, you know, let's get something in that's going to see us through to, you know, 10 times the amount of customers that we've got now, and then 100 times the amount of customers that we've got now, and then 1,000 times. And, you know, to be fair, along the way, you know, we've certainly been, you know, tested and frightened a little bit by how much data we can actually get. There was one time early on that, in fact, it was only a few weeks into, you know, having launched our system, where you know, a new customer came on board, and all of a sudden they were sending at rates that were sort of tens of thousands of times above what we had seen before. I remember being sort of online one night and the pager alerts went off, and it was like the our sort of internal buffers were being saturated. And we literally had sort of seconds before they were about to run out by the time we kind of dealt with the problem. And so a lot of the time it's just about, you know, just scaling one step ahead of yourself. So that sort of notion of scaling our systems is actually just sort of a continuous cycle for us. You know, we're always thinking about where are the bottlenecks? You know, what are we going to be doing to kind of ramp this up so that we can sort of like 10x the volume through this section of the pipeline, and just really approach it in a sort of methodical fashion like that.
It almost seems like you're every day preparing for a benevolent DDoS where someone's going to do a distributed denial of service on you, except they're using your APIs and your own product against you without meaning to. Like, you know, sorry, we turned everything on verbose. You have to be ready for anything.
You'd be surprised at how much that happens, yeah. it's just the nature of this, you know, and to be fair, you know, this is what the cloud has unlocked in a way. It's unlocked the ability for, you know, the internet to be, you know, be hitting you pretty regularly. And so by design, when you kind of set yourself up with that model, you are effectively asking for a DDoS at any given point in time. And so you just have to be prepared for that and, you know, build a bit of resiliency into the system to just know that that's actually going to be a thing that you're dealing with all the time. And, you know, we're at a certain scale. There's plenty of people who are at a much bigger scale than us. So, you know, we can take inspiration and learnings from, you know, what other people are doing. You know, they might be in a different stage of their journey. But, you know, another great thing, you know, certainly in the last sort of 10 years, which I'm sure you'd probably agree with, is that, you know, there's a lot more sharing of this information, of the learnings, of the fact that, you know, we're dealing with these challenges. You know, maybe it's not the most, you know, elegant solution that everyone uses, but, you know, here's the ways in practice that we deal with these problems. And, you know, we're all learning, we're all incrementing, and, you know, we might find better ways over time. But, you know, it's really heartening that, you know, we as a industry are able to kind of collectively level up in this way.
Mm-hmm. Now, this is built in .NET Core, but your SDKs are all languages. Like, it doesn't matter. It's all HTTP. But you picked .NET Core on the back end. Is that correct?
Yeah, originally, I mean, we're very much, you know, historically a Microsoft shop. Both JD and I, JD, my co-founder, we were .NET developers. So, you know, it's a common thing, you know, developers go with what they know and what they trust. So for a long time, we were leveraging Bull Framework. When .NET Core started to appear on the horizon, we were quite interested in it, particularly with the view that there was going to be a lot more iteration in that framework. So there was the opportunity to get involved as well with, you know, looking at how the framework works, submitting a pull request. You know, we haven't really done too much of that in practice, but, you know, we've been able to leverage off the great efforts that exist in the community. You know, there's people like Ben Adams who have really put in a huge focus on performance in the framework. We're all the beneficiaries of his, you know, amazing work. Yeah, we're really in the transition phase now of trying to port as much of our ingestion pipeline over to .NET Core as quickly as possible. There's amazing sort of performance wins that we can unlock by using .NET Core. And obviously from our thinking more holistically as a CTO, you know, the technology choice is just a one-to-one, right? It's still .NET. It's still building using the same base class libraries. You know, there's a little bit of difference there, I guess. But at the end of the day, it's very, very familiar. And it's, you know, still as productive. And you're still using the same tooling and the same tool chain and all the build systems and all of that. So it makes the switch quite easy. And, you know, I think I've also sort of derived a lot of confidence from, you know, Microsoft's sort of stance on this, which is, you know, this is the bleeding edge. But, you know, we're going to bring back a lot of the good stuff and try and, you know, land that back into the full framework over time.
If I were going to build something big, real big, the thing that I always worry about isn't that I can do it or not. It's that the thing that I'm building on top of is not going to have some weird insidious problem like underload, whether it be Node or Go or .NET or whatever. There's always that concern that you're sitting on a stack and you just don't know if it's going to like have a memory leak or blow up under pressure or have some fundamental architectural issue around threading or async or whatever. You know, how do you deal with that when you're pushing so much traffic through such a huge pipe? Did you think about that in the context of .NET or .NET Core, or did you test for things like that?
Early on, we probably wouldn't have thought too much about it at all, really. You know, we were committed to building in .NET. We built in .NET. Over time, obviously, as the scale started ramping up, performance became far more of a thing, you know, like it becomes a feature, you know, it's something that is ingrained into our thinking. It's ingrained into this, you know, the way in which these parts of our system have to work. Mm-hmm. So over time, you know, we've, I guess, gotten a lot more into really benchmarking and understanding what's going on, where's the time going, you know. Like I sort of talked about at the beginning with why you'd use an APM tool in the first place, you know, this technique kind of obviously just goes, you know, can be applied further to, you know, how's the framework looking? You know, we can measure that as well. So, and we can obviously just benchmark the system as a whole and understand, you know, okay, where's it slowing down and, you know, why is it potentially locking up or where's the contention? Is that a framework problem? Is it something on our side? Again, you know, you kind of mentioned, oh, you know, you wouldn't want to be building on like a house of cards. And with the full framework, you know, I never particularly found any issues there. But, you know, as we've sort of seen with the development of .NET Core and all of the community contributions, there's plenty of room on the table still to improve performance. And but that hasn't necessarily hampered anyone in terms of delivering systems. But it's really nice to know that that's a far bigger focus within Microsoft, and certainly the development of .NET Core and the continuing kind of evolution of it, that, you know, a lot of people are dealing with these problems. They're concerned about performance. They're interested in making sure the framework's as tight as possible. And, you know, those contributions all kind of come together, you know, and we all benefit from it.
Right. And it seems like there's subtle things. Like I know that some people feel like .NET folks talk about span of T too much. Like it's the biggest thing since link, or the biggest thing since, you know, generics. But it feels to me like not, you know, avoiding unnecessarily copying around stuff that you already have in memory is a pretty big deal. And the underlying parts of .NET Core that have been improved by the span of T would probably benefit an APM system as well.
I think they'll benefit most people, to be honest. You know, one quick example within in the context of our ingestion pipeline, that where this makes a big difference is JSON serialization or deserialization, right? You know, that's something that, you know, historically, you know, everyone just kind of uses a library for, and you just don't really think too much about it. Everyone kind of knows that, well, it's kind of slow. One of the reasons it's slow is that there's a lot of memory allocations and sort of copying that goes around, because, you know, you're dividing things up and creating new little objects to represent the object model and all of that. And by, you know, using a technique like span, which at the end of the day, it's just a fixed sort of pointer across a block of memory, where you can avoid those allocations just by repointing and, you know, well, this copy is just, you know, these bytes from, you know, 4 to 16, rather than we'll copy it and you know, incur all of that cost. So everyone, you know, who's using JSON serialization, deserialization today, and, you know, if they're able to move to .NET Core 3, where those improvements have been made, they will benefit from that for free. So those sort of performance wins, you know, while, yeah, sure, using span is definitely a great thing, you know, where you can leverage it. You know, it's good to see that that's been kind of baked in into the framework itself, so that even if you're not necessarily thinking about these things or don't want to think about these things, they're not really top of mind, they're not a major concern, you are still going to pick up the benefits of having these things brought into the you know, the worldview of .NET.
Very cool. Well, thank you so much, Jeremy Boyd, CTO of Raygun, for talking to me today about the world of application performance monitoring, management, however you want to call it. I've learned a lot. I appreciate your time.
Thanks, Scott. Really appreciate it.
This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.